Reflections, a podcast for spiritual insights in deepening one's relationship with Jesus Christ. This is a Depores Pages podcast. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or go to thefriar.org. Hello, and welcome to a new podcast on the Depores Pages at thefriar.org, a podcast entitled Reflections, and it is simply that, an opportunity to provide my reflections on spiritual matters that I encounter, whether it's in the scriptures or whether it is in conversation or in life or in a news story, but not so much like commentary, which is more specifically an opinion-related piece on something that you hear, but really on something that can be uplifting and may help us to recognize both the love and presence of God in those moments in our life which are really difficult, really hard, where maybe we're surrounded by a lot of darkness and sadness and challenge, but also for those moments when we will experience great celebration and joy and happiness. And those moments will come again because God loves us so much. We know and are confident of that. Today, obviously, it's Palm Sunday, and I thought maybe the most important type of thing to reflect on today is this idea of God's love for us and what we hear and experience and encounter in the Passion account that we hear in the second of the Gospels today. We have two Gospels on Palm Sunday, and today we have the second of those, which is the longest. Sometimes this is the part that's done in dialogue in parishes with people taking different parts. You may be in a parish where it's read all at once by one reader, a deacon or a priest, but I'd like to talk a little bit about it. Yesterday I was listening to a reflection by my very good friend, Monsignor Richard LaValle, who is the pastor of St. Francis Xavier in Winooski, Vermont. And something struck me that he said that I think bears a little unpacking perhaps for us today. And namely, he talked about how Palm Sunday was the story of the human heart. And I thought that that was particularly powerful and profound because during this time, we still see kind of the fickle nature of the human heart as we deal with this pandemic, as we deal with this coronavirus, this COVID-19 virus. Now I'm hearing it's being called SARS-2. We know these are difficult times. We're not allowed to go about things as we used to be able to do before the pandemic. And it's really a story of the human heart. And he was contrasting the two moments of the human heart in both the Palm Sunday account, which was the first gospel that we hear today, and in the reading of the Passion, which is the second. In the first gospel, the human heart is elated with the tremendous joy that comes in welcoming the Messiah, in seeing Jesus as the Christ. But just a few days later, we're going to understand and see that the human heart, fickle as it is now going to be calling for this same man's death. But what struck me about kind of seeing those two aspects of the human heart is how so often we can see ourselves in so many of the characters that we're going to encounter. Or even if we haven't thought about it, maybe we can understand that in each of the persons that we encounter, there's a little bit of us in it. Maybe a lot of us, depending on the character. But that the real, real purpose of this Passion is to get us to focus on the powerful love of God for each one of us. That regardless of who we find ourselves being in terms of the heart, what we really experience here is the power of God's love. So let me just walk through the Passion and point out a few. I'm not going to point out everybody that's mentioned, but a few, and maybe to get us thinking about how it is that we, our heart, our person, can be like the person we encounter. Who's the very first person we encounter in the reading of the Passion? Judas Iscariot. Now, it's easy to dismiss what we read and hear and say, I could never betray Jesus. I would not do that. But the truth is, every time we sin, we betray Jesus. Now, I don't think that Judas was a horrible, horrible human being. I think he really expected that by the action he took, he would get Jesus to be the Christ, and he would get Jesus to do something powerful and dramatic and overwhelming. But he was wrong. And in being wrong, that led him to recognize that he had fundamentally mistaken what it meant for Jesus to be the Messiah. Now that's fine. We see that all over the Gospels. What was the great sin of Jesus, of Judas rather? The great sin of Judas was to forget the love and mercy of God. How different would the story have been if the human heart of Judas had even a little bit of room for the forgiveness of the Son of God? How different would things have been if there had been simply a little bit of time and talent to love God? And to recognize that there is no sin that is too awful, too terrible, that God cannot forgive. And so at those times when you might feel that you are the sinful Judas, remember that more powerful than our sin, what we're going to celebrate this week is that God's love is even more powerful. There is nothing that can separate us from the love of God, says St. Paul. And so if you're feeling like Judas these days, for whatever reason, unlovable or too far gone for Jesus to care about, or just too terrible a person, maybe you're filled with self-loathing, maybe you can't see yourself as the person that is so deeply loved by Jesus, but ask Jesus to help you to know that. Ask Jesus to help you to experience that. Because we have that Judas inside our heart too. But God is more powerful than any sin we can commit. And then we get a picture of the disciples. Now the disciples are amazing, amazing men, right? Because they have seen, they have witnessed, they have been very close to the powerful and miraculous actions of Jesus. And they are convinced at this moment that they will be able to take their experience, their faith of those moments to the very end. That if they have to die with Jesus, they will die with Jesus. And nobody insists on that more strongly than Peter. The denial that he couldn't even admit that he even knew Jesus became the great failing of Peter, the threefold denial. But thanks be to God, Peter understood what Judas could not. Peter weeps bitterly. It is not that he does not recognize the depth and the power of his sin. In some ways, what Peter recognizes is not that much different, or that what he did was not that much different than what Judas did. But Peter understood something more fundamentally powerful than even his deep, bitter regret that he could not admit he knew Jesus. He recognized that the love and the mercy and the forgiveness of God was so powerful that it could forgive even this deep failure on the part of Peter. And we have a little bit of that in our hearts as well. And then we encounter the interesting moment where there are all these people, but we see in particular a privileged moment where Jesus takes Peter, James, and John and prays. Now, here's the amazing thing. The amazing thing is that these three who have just professed that they would be willing to die with Jesus cannot simply stay awake. They can't keep their eyes open. And there's a powerful lesson for us in this moment. There is something that is unbelievably amazing in this moment. That it's not completely up to us, is it? We should be praying. They should have been praying because they're going to be tested. We know they're going to run away. Peter is going to deny Jesus. All these promises they made are going to be for nothing because they failed. But they're weak. They have not fully allowed the Spirit of God to come into their hearts. That won't happen until Pentecost. They don't know the power of God's love yet, but they will. I often say as a teacher that the most powerful word in the English language is the word yet. Y-E-T. Why do I say that? Well, think of a kid struggling in school who says, I'm not very good at math. And then imagine if that same sentence simply added the word yet. I am not that good at math. Excuse me. I am not that good at math yet. See, that's a future and a hopeful statement. They have not experienced the love of God deeply for them yet. They're still thinking in a different way. They don't see the world appropriately. Their weakness can be just like you and I, or just like you and me, when what we do is think that we can do it all ourselves, that we can think ourselves, we can put forth all the effort ourselves, that we don't need any kind of spiritual grace or spiritual help. We can do it all ourselves. The flesh, however, is weak. Our effort, when it is not combined with the grace and love of God, falls short. That's what happened. But what happens when we act in the Spirit? Jesus gives us that example. When we act in the Spirit, we recognize that we can do the will of God regardless, because we have God's help. We have God's grace. We're not left to our own. We're not having everything depend upon our willpower or our own effort. We are aided and abetted by this powerful grace of God that is beyond our wildest imaginings. The Spirit is willing because God is always wanting to send out grace to us, and does. We simply have to accept. That's all we have to do. That's all we have to do. And so the tired, fatigued James and John are in us too. That belief that we can do everything by ourselves. That we don't need the help of God. We don't need the help of His grace. We encounter here the Jewish people, the Sanhedrin, not the entire Jewish people, but the Sanhedrin. They were pragmatists. If we hear this, we hear that Caiaphas was the one who suggested that really what was at stake in allowing Jesus to go on doing the works of God was the death of Israel as a nation, as a people. He had so convinced himself that his reasoning was so accurate that he could blind himself to what God was doing in Jesus Christ. Because the things that Jesus was doing were unbelievably miraculous. But Caiaphas was more concerned with his reasoning, with his unbelievable ability, so he thought, to put things together for the good of the Jewish people. This reminds us that the place we need to be is not to cast aside our reason. The fault of Caiaphas was not that he used his reason. The fault of Caiaphas was that he didn't bring that understanding to prayer to see if it aligned with what God wanted in that moment. Because had he done so, he would have seen the miraculous deeds of God being done in the midst of the people. And wow, that would have been amazing indeed. Because then he would have been able to embrace the very Messiah that had been so long promised. What he saw as the Romans coming in and taking away, destroying the Israelites, the Israel people, the nation, the faith, what they enjoyed under the Romans, he saw that. But imagine if he could have seen the actions of God. Imagine if he could have seen who Jesus was. The divine Son of God, who had come as the Messiah, the Christ, for the liberation of not only the Jewish people, but everybody in the world. Imagine if he and the others could have seen that, but they were blinded. They could not see because all they could see was themselves. All they could see was what they had dreamt up. And it blinded them to the purpose and plan and action of God. Do you allow yourself to be blinded to what God is doing in your life? That's what sin does. What sin does is that sin blinds us to the very actions of God, to those things that God does for our goodness, for our salvation, for our forgiveness, for our ability to see clearly things as they are, the things of God. Now, Pilate was not a nice guy. He was a powerful leader, but he was brutal as a leader because this was the most difficult province for the Roman Empire. Because there was this religious tension and this political tension and this cultural tension. It was a difficult province to bring into the Roman Empire to live like the Romans. And we're going to see that not only in this period of time, but for a long period of time. It was very difficult. So Pilate is not a nice guy. He is not the one who, quite frankly, is going to see clearly. He simply wants things to be calm. He wants everybody, quote, to get along. That is not the great thing, however. That sometimes we need to recognize that we need to stand up for what is right. Now, things might have broken out in a terrible riot had Pilate simply said, "I'm going to release Jesus." Maybe Jesus would have been killed anyway. But Pilate represents the coward in us. Pilate represents the part of our heart where what we see deep within us is a desire not to be noticed, not to stand out. It's the desire not to say something, to do something, to believe something that's going to make us unpopular. It's the desire not to be countercultural, but to fit in at the price of our principles, our morals, our faith. We should not deliberately be going around to stir up trouble. That's not the point. But when there are those moments where something happens and we need to stand up for what we believe in, those principles deep within our heart, we cannot be like Pilate. We have to be like Christ, willing to go, to do, to be that servant of God that is always going to do the Father's will. Even when, as a human, he might choose something else. But Pilate can't do that. He can't. He just is incapable. Even when his wife comes to him to share with him something that she's had that is of God. And such is the sadness that is Pilate. At that moment, Pilate is only concerned about himself, his power, his comfort. And how easy it is that we are the hearts of everybody else. The mob. The ones who can only say, crucify him, crucify him. The ones who can only mock him on that cross, caught up in the movement of so many, believing that we are acting out of good and right and holy principles, but recognizing that we are not. This week, we are the ones who are challenged to recognize that when Jesus is on that cross, he's on that cross for everyone, for all sin, so that we can be saved, so that all sin can be forgiven. It is all the sins that are ever going to be committed that are on that cross to be redeemed by Christ. Jesus goes to that cross because his love is for every human being. No matter how heinous an action, God still loves that person. No matter how deep is our sinfulness, God still is on that cross for the salvation of that person. God is on that cross for you and for me. Not because we deserve it, but because he loves us. And if we can embrace this love of God, we can hear him say what he said to that thief on the cross who asked to be remembered by Jesus when he went into his kingdom. This day, you will be with me in paradise. So today, think about who you are. There are others in this story we haven't mentioned. But who are you? What part of your heart do you need healed? What part of your heart do you need the Lord Jesus Christ to come and to heal and to save? For that is what this Holy Week is about. Entering fully and completely into this week we call holy with the events of Jesus all geared to our salvation, all geared to show his powerful love for us, all geared to let us know that no matter how deep is our sin, no matter how strong is the evil in our lives, that when we surrender to Jesus, we indeed can be saved. This has been Reflections, a podcast of the DePorah's Pages podcasts. These podcasts are available at thefriar.org, and you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The music for this podcast is entitled Piano Improvisations by Alexander Nakarada and can be found at filmmusic.io. It is used with permission under the Creative Commons license. Full information about this song can be found in the post for this podcast.